serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, picking up some 4th of July perspective today through the stories of three World War II veterans and where they found themselves 75 years ago. Robert Hammond was a 19-year-old Navy corpsman serving in the Pacific with the Munford Point Marines, a segregated unit formed after the Marine Corps finally opened up to African Americans in 1942. Hammond, who went on to a long career in the field of public health, was born to a white mother and a black father in Philadelphia. He had never encountered the kind of racial discrimination he witnessed when training with the Munford Point Marines in North Carolina.
What had happened was a Marine from New York had gotten off the bus and went into the station there and asked. They had brought in vending machines for cigarettes, and he walked into the white side, not paying attention. They had signs up, colored white then. He went in the white side and threw a dollar bill at the lady and asked, "Say, sweetheart, can we change for a dollar?" And she threw four quarters at him, and then she looked at him and then screamed. And then the police came and arrested him and took the guy and put him in jail. Now, word got back to Munford Point that there was a Marine in jail down there. So it got over to Bobby Troop, Sergeant Fisher, who was white, another sergeant, very liberal people. They didn't go for that discrimination because they weren't from the South. And they said, "We're going to go get that Marine." 1,000 black Marines got in trucks with 50-caliber machine guns on it. And we went into town, in that little old town. The railroad track went right down the middle, this side and that, black people this side, white people this side. City Hall was on this side. And the police station was on that side. And we went down there. And when we got down there, they were beating this Marine up. We arrested the whole police force.
Wow.
It was about eight policemen in there, the chief of police and everybody else, and took them back to Munford Point and put them in the brig. Then all hell broke out from that. The commandant of the Marine Corps, he came over. What are you men going into town arresting police officers for? So we told him what he did. He said, "We're not going to leave a Marine behind. What are you talking about? You're the commandant of the whole Marine Corps. Would you leave him behind?" We had Tom McFadder at the time, Sergeant Thomas McFadder. He was the one that said, "Can't leave him there." Tom wrote a book called Caught in the Middle. And he became a Navy chaplain later on. But anyway, we took the Marine back, locked those officers up. The colonel just left us alone. They said, "You guys go ahead and do what you're going to do." Just left us alone. And we kept those policemen in there for 5 days in the brig and on bread and water and turned them loose. And we told them, "Don't you ever mess with a Marine again." That's what McFadder told them. "Don't mess with any of these Munford Point Marines." Because people were spitting on them and just harassing them and treating them mean. "Boy, where'd you get that uniform? You don't belong in it," and spit on them. They cut all that stuff, was cut out. But that was, to me, it was outrageous behavior. And I had never seen this. Here, I'm going to go fight Germans and Japanese, and here they're treating us worse than them because they had some German prisoners of war there. They treated them better than us. So that kind of got us. But anyway, a lot was going on there with the medical corps. The Marines got better. They got better treatment. They bowed down now to a corpsman. We were the first ones in line at the chow hall. They waited on us. When we went out on liberty, they gathered around us and just took care of us. We didn't have to spend one penny for nothing if we went out with those Munford Pointers. So when we got overseas, they still rallied around the corpsman. And the corpsman had to look, there's about four platoons. Platoon had 40 men. And that's 160 men. We had to watch them. keep an eye on them. Something happened to them, you were there with them. And they knew that. In marching, if you ever watch the Marines march, you'll see a swagger that they got from the Mumford Point Marines, from Big Elmo. They put these men in ammo companies and supply companies, not in combat battalions. We all had weapons. If we had to use them, we used them. But we had all the food, all the medical supplies. We had all the ammunition. We had everything the Marines would want. And we brought those to those islands.
And you ended up on Guam, is that right?
I ended up there at Camp Wise at the medical dispensary on Guam. We had a small hospital there. Then over, we called it Barracuda Village, near the airfield up there in Agana, where the Marines were. That was the 51st and 52nd anti-aircraft companies up there. Later on, we had two black doctors. One was a Lieutenant J.G., another one was a full lieutenant. Alvin Lawrence was lieutenant. He was from Chicago. C.J. Jones from New York, from Brooklyn, he was a Lieutenant J.G. They had some stories. I wish they were alive because they told me what they were up against as officers. A lot of the white sailors and Marines wouldn't salute them. And Dr. Jones went and put his hat on a post and told this Marine, if you can't salute me, you salute that hat. But he went through a lot. But if somebody, and he was a surgeon, and he treated a lot of those guys. And one of the things that they did, I think they carried segregation too far. They segregated blood. 1X for white, 2X for black, 3X for Mexican, 4X for Native American on the bottles.
Wow.
When blood is only A, A, B, and O, you know. And one time in surgery, I went and got, they were operating on this white guy. They needed blood, and they told me to go down and bring back some A blood. I brought back a bottle of A blood. I didn't know nothing about these X's, and it had two X's on it. And I handed it to the nurse. She dropped it on the floor, broke it. And the doctor there operated, what did you drop that for? And she said, we can't give him, use the N-word, blood.
Wow.
And that doctor said, listen, blood is blood. I wanted A blood. Give it to him. I don't care what the X's are. It doesn't mean a damn thing.
Right.
So in the meantime, you had a hematologist named Dr. Charles Drew, who invented blood plasma. The United States wouldn't use its plasma, so he took it to England. And when Hitler was bombing England, 1945, tearing it up, there was a shortage of blood. The Americans wanted to know, you have a shortage of blood over here? He said, no, we use Dr. Drew's blood plasma. And they said, oh, we can't use that. It's crystal. We can't segregate it. And they laughed at the American doctors for that. See? And then they started using it. And right then and there, they start using this plasma. And they took the X's off those bottles. And then Roosevelt died after that. When Roosevelt died and Harry Truman got in there, all sorts of things were happening in the armed forces, black troops, the army. You had Camp Van Dorn. You had Fort Bliss, riots. You had Port Chicago. And there was one up, Shoemaker, there was one up there. Tuskegee Airmen. There's one in Louisiana. All these broke out. And it started affecting the war effort. And Harry Truman says, we're not going to have none of that. We're going to integrate the whole thing. And I don't care if those Southern colonels and generals object to it. They could get the hell out. That's what they could do. So the whole thing got integrated in 48.
Right.
And all that stuff stopped. My learning from being in the Marine Corps, a lot of those guys distinguished themselves. A few of them got, under Clinton, Congressional Medal of Honor. Some of them were dead. I think three of them were living. I think they gave Miss Daly, the first black nurse, they gave her one. I think they gave her one. I didn't get anything.
But one thing you did get recently with a lot of your fellow Munford Point veterans was the Congressional Gold Medal. To have that happen so long after the fact, more than 65 years after World War II, what did that mean to you? Was it better late than never?
At my age now, and with the experiences that I had in the Navy and Marine Corps, I knew the Golden 13. Matter of fact, George C. Cooper, one of them, was my boss in Dayton, Ohio, and I was the director of health there. And my whole career was centered around my corpsman activities in the Marine Corps and Navy, because I didn't want to do corrective medicine. I wanted to do preventative medicine, so I got into the environmental health aspect of it and followed that, public health. And that was my career. I was able to do a lot of things, especially here. I became the chief of environmental health for a county in Los Angeles, director of health in Dayton, Ohio, assistant director for Montgomery County in back east there, and World Health. I did a little bit of work with them. I'm a member of the Royal Society of Health. So my background was very based upon what I learned in the Marine Corps and the kinds of things that I did. I used to be the suture man. I could sew a guy up. I mean, really sew him up. And some of these Munford Pointers, even today, when they see me, they call me the devil doc. They say, see that hand, you sewed it up. And it was perfect. Dr. Jones used to say, who did this? I said, I did. He says, you need to be a surgeon. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep people from getting sick. They're not going to have any wars when I come out of here. So I was very grateful to have that kind of experience. I mean, racism, Jim Crowism, I broke down a lot of those barriers. And I've got 1,000 stories I could tell in regards to mistreatment, but I had some good treatment while I was in there.
So you can see the value of your experience and what it led to later on in your life, but I imagine it was still really satisfying to be there with all these other veterans who were mistreated but still served their country, that put their lives on the line, and to have the Congress of the United States hand you these big heavy medals and say, you know what, you're special. What was that like for you?
Well, I felt very proud of that because it made me feel that I'm 100% American in that. And I remember when we went to the memorializing of the Battle of Iwo Jima at Arlington Cemetery, President Clinton was there, and we were there, and he mentioned, he said, those men over there are members of the Double V. And we all laughed and did that to him. He knew what it was. He said they had two wars to fight, one at abroad and one at home, and they won both of them. Then that made me feel proud, and to get that Congressional Gold Medal made me even feel prouder because it brought back some pleasant memories, like at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. When I was there, we were all lined up outside for the president. Harry Truman came to visit the hospital. And we were at Captain's Muster there. And he came down, came right over to me. He says, boy, he says, son, you're looking good. And he straightened my tie and shook hands with me. And he kept on going with his big hat. President of the United States. So all of these things turn to, you know, being a citizen of being born in this country. And I say, now, sometimes I say, now, who do I really belong to? You know, I'm not going to say I belong to this group. I belong to that group. I belong to all of them. So that makes me 100% American with no hyphens.
You know, that comment has always stuck with me. 100% American with no hyphens. America wasn't perfect in World War II. We know it isn't perfect now. But the men that you heard from today and millions of American men and women before and since have believed enough in the principles that have been reverberating since July 4th, 1776, that they've risked their lives in an effort to see that promise of unalienable rights for all people move closer to reality. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler reminding you that on Independence Day and every day, freedom is not free.